Today's show is a very special show about a Vietnam veteran, Mr. J.L. Tucker, who served in Vietnam from 1965 to 1966. J.L.'s with us this morning. How you doing, J.L.?
Fine. Thank you, Randy, for having me.
Well, you're welcome. For those of you who follow the history of the Vietnam War, it was 1965 when it really started heating up, and there was a battle there and even a book written about it, We Were Soldiers, in Idrang Valley. But there were some other little hamlets around there.
Play Me,
mm-hmm. Play Coup.
Anke. Yeah.
Okay.
That was the two base camps.
You know, before we get started into it, I just want to let you know, you folks that have been listening to it a long time, you know I'm not a veteran. So there's sometimes I can't fathom some of the things that the veterans experience. I can't share them with you. You have to hear it from the veterans themselves. And we really appreciate the ones that have been on the show recently to share their stories so that we know that they didn't just go to Vietnam and then come back home and go back to their normal lives. They went to Vietnam and experienced things that changed their lives. And that they have carried with them ever since that happened. So that's what we're going to be looking at today. But to give you an idea what the story is going to be about today, we're going to take an Army supply clerk in Vietnam and who's used to doing paperwork and used to doing things that whatever had to be done, supply specialists and things like that. And then he's going to hear that they need several volunteers. Mm-hmm. And this soldier volunteered to do whatever he had to do on that mission that day. And that's what our show is going to be about, was what happened to him on that mission, what he experienced, what he saw, what he felt, and, again, how he carried that with him for so long. Very special and disturbing and special experience in Vietnam. How you doing, J.L. Tucker?
I'm doing fine. How about you, man?
I'm good. So I want to know, did you live in Knoxville before the war?
No.
Where were you from?
Hillsborough County, Florida, Tampa.
In Tampa, Florida? Mm-hmm. Okay.
That's where I went and volunteered.
You volunteered after high school?
No, I didn't finish high school.
Okay. So you went into the Army, what, at 17?
Yeah, 17.
Did your mama let you do that?
Yeah. Yeah, they didn't say anything.
Okay. And did you know where you were going or what you might be doing?
Mm-mm. No.
Okay. Why did you not finish high school and join?
Well, when I was raised, we had large families. Mm-hmm. So when you got 16, if you wanted to quit school, you could. You wasn't encouraged to quit, but you wasn't encouraged to attend either. And I had to go to work to help support my family. So when I turned 17, I went to Tampa to the recruiting station and volunteered for 3 years. And back then, we hadn't even heard about Vietnam.
Did you pick the Army or did you consider the Air Force or the mm-hmm. Navy? You just said, I want to go to the Army.
Yeah. I never considered anything else.
So you joined the Army, and then what happened?
Well, I was sent to Jacksonville while I was inducted. And then they sent me to Fort Jackson, South Carolina, for basic training, about 8 weeks. And after a 30-day leave, I went back to Fort Jackson to be trained as a personnel specialist to start with.
What did you do in your 30-day leave first? Did you go back home?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Did you wear your uniform, walk around town?
No, I never did wear it downtown. Really? I wore it around the house.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. So after training, then you went somewhere else?
Yeah. I was sent to Korea for a year.
Okay.
And I served a tour in Korea.
Then you went home again, or did you go to Vietnam?
Yeah, got a 30-day leave.
Got a 30-day leave. Did you go back home?
Yeah.
Still wearing your uniform?
Yeah.
You didn't know where you were going after that?
No. Well, I went back to, I had orders to report to Fort Benning, Georgia. And I became a part of the 383rd Transportation Detachment, was attached to the 17th Aviation Company, and we were with the first part of the 1st Air Cavalry Division. But at the time, it was the 11th Air Assault. We were training to, didn't know what to start with, was training to go to Vietnam.
You were 17?
Mm-hmm.
Were there lots of 17-year-old boys in there?
Oh, yes. Many.
And so you get trained.
Yeah.
And then they say you're pack your stuff and we're heading out?
Mm-hmm.
Did you know where you were going then?
Yeah. Yeah, by then we knew. We were training because this was the first time helicopters had been used as a primary way of getting the troops in and out of battle. And, of course, I was trained to drive trucks. We had to do the 20-mile marches and all that stuff. Then we got orders to deploy to Vietnam, and it became the 1st Air Cavalry Division.
Okay, here's what I want to know. What did you know about Vietnam at the time?
Not very much. I knew we had advisors there.
Okay, did you know where it was? Did you locate it on a map?
No,
or?
Never looked.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so hey, Mom, I'm going to Vietnam. Be back soon.
Yeah.
Okay. Did you know it was a 1-year deployment, or did you know?
I think 8 months.
8 months. Yeah. And when was that? I mean, when did you leave?
February.
February mm-hmm. of 65.
Mm-hmm. No, yeah, 66.
No, I mean, when you left America.
Yeah. We left America in August 1965.
So it was only 2 months or so, or 3 months before the battle at Idrang.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We arrived by sea on, I think, August 14th of 1965.
What's your birthday?
15th of March, 1945.
So now you were pushing 19 or 20?
20.
20. Mm-hmm. So you arrived in Vietnam, mm-hmm. and what was your job?
Well, I started out as a supply specialist, and okay. I ordered parts for trucks and aircraft. And we got off the ship the next morning and helicoptered into Pleiku, which wasn't very far from Cambodia.
Mm-hmm.
It was in the Central Highlands.
Did you wonder what a supply specialist would be doing at Pleiku? Would you be doing the same job?
Mm-hmm. That's what I started out doing, yeah.
Okay, so you started out being a supply specialist, mm-hmm. but it changed.
Yeah, because I volunteered. I had to go from Pleiku, usually flew in a CV-2B aircraft, to Anh Ke. And a lot of times there would be supplies loaded on the conveyor roller to be dropped into troops in battle. So we would land at Pleiku, and I would do paperwork down there for the division for 2 or 3 days while we were getting a convoy ready to go back to Pleiku.
Did you know you were getting closer to the battle, or were you getting closer to the battle, or was there no battle going on?
There was no battle then, but anywhere you went in Vietnam, you were in danger, you know. And like on the highway going from Anh Ke to Pleiku, the hillsides were full of caves, and snipers would come out and harass you and shoot at you. We had the floorboard of the truck full of sandbags because it was dangerous running over a landmine, and they was trying to save our feet and legs. So,
what caused you to volunteer? I mean, did you just say, "Hey, I'm going to do anything I can"? Or
mm-hmm. Yes, sir, just whatever they needed me to do. And I had a helper in the supply room, so when I was gone, he took over.
So supply clerk and supply specialist
mm-hmm.
goes to 2 or 3 different,
mm-hmm.
were they fire bases or were they?
Yeah, no, well, they were base camps.
Base camps.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so help me understand here. If you were in Vietnam and you went somewhere, you'd have a base camp, and then out from there like a spider, you mm-hmm. would have landing zones? Or
yeah.
But they would be fed by the base camp?
Mm-hmm. Supplied, yeah.
Okay. And about how far would the landing zones be?
Well, I'm not quite sure about how many miles, but the Idrang Valley and Play Me and Play Coup wasn't very far apart. I'm not sure exactly how many miles.
And those were landing zones?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay, like landing zone Albany and landing zone X-Ray. Mm-hmm. Okay.
But Play Me was a special forces encampment that became under heavy siege and was nearly overrun.
Before you got there?
No, I was there.
You were there while it was happening?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Well, I was in Play Coup. Okay. And they were just, I think, southeast of us.
That was the base camp?
Play Me was an encampment of special forces.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. So you volunteered, and what were your, when you said, okay, I volunteer, what did it tell you were going to do?
Well, I would fly by aircraft down to Anh Ke and do paperwork for 2 or 3 days, and then I volunteered to drive one of the trucks, a 2.5-ton truck, back to Pleiku. But there was a whole column, you know, with different supplies and ammunition, fuel, all kinds of stuff.
No IEDs at the time. They didn't use IEDs at the time, did they?
Well, just landmines. There was a lot of landmines.
Yeah.
We call them claymores.
Okay. All right. And then you got to the place where you volunteered. I mean, were you in a tent when you just said, hey, I'll go do that? Or were you in a bunker? Or were you in a barracks? Or?
Well, I had an office.
Okay.
But we also had guard duty a couple times a week.
Uh-huh.
And 3 of us would be in each bunker. We had concrete bunker. And one man would be on top of the bunker, one man would be resting, and one man would be on the M60 machine gun manning it.
That was the gun they called the Saw.
I never heard of that. Yeah. But that wasn't volunteer.
Yeah, okay.
You had to do that.
Okay, all right. So were you looking to get out of that situation when you volunteered, or did you just said, hey, this is just a new...
Yeah. This is just something that's got to be done. We did whatever we was asked.
And before we go to break, what did they tell you had to be done? Or they didn't tell you, did they?
No, just as it came, you know.
When they needed
somebody to do something, I did.
Okay, so they walked in and said, we need volunteers, and you didn't ask. Mm-hmm. You just said, I'll go.
Yeah, right.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Wow. You're going to hear what happened in the next segment. And you were a supply specialist,
mm-hmm.
Okay, not a combat soldier.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you were trained for combat.
Well, yes. I wasn't a trained infantryman.
Okay.
We had training, you know.
Okay.
Basic training.
So you made everything keeping it running.
Yeah.
Okay. And one day somebody came in and said, we need a volunteer, and up went your hand.
Mm-hmm.
Let's start from there and tell us what was going on.
Now, this is where the helicopters come in.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I was sitting on my bunk. We were taking a lunch break. It was about 12:30. I'll never forget it. And we had just got back from Pleiku with a convoy. Now, your listeners, please be with me, because a lot of times I get emotional when I talk about this. But I prayed all week for him to help get me through it so they can hear the story.
Good.
And,
good, thank you.
They come over the PA system that we had incoming casualties, and they needed some volunteers down to the tarmac, which is part of the landing zone, and a parking area for the aircraft.
Let's go back to that in a minute. Now, you said you – say that again. They took you to the tarmac?
No, we went down there. We ran.
You ran down there. Mm-hmm. Okay. Down to the tarmac, mm-hmm. and you were waiting.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And about 1 o'clock, there's a sound of a Huey, and he came around facing us and sat down, turned around, and set the skids down. He opened the doors, and they were maybe 6 to 10 dead. I don't remember, but they were all KIAs, no wounded. So we unloaded them.
Time out. Did you all open the door?
No, they didn't.
They did, from the inside?
Mm-hmm.
And you didn't know what you were going to see, mm-hmm. or what to expect?
No.
And what did you see?
We were looking for wounded, but they were all KIAs. They were all killed. There was nobody left.
Well, were they lined up, or were they piled in? Or
they were just laying in the floor of the helicopter.
Okay, all their heads in one way?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that one, yeah.
Yeah. And you didn't know where they were coming from, and you didn't know what it was going to be when they opened the door.
Yeah.
Okay, take us from there.
Well, we unloaded those 8 or 10, and, you know, it was bad enough. But then after they carried those bodies up to a big tent we had fixed up to put them in, a big Chinook, CH-47 Chinook.
That's the helicopter with a wing on both ends.
Mm-hmm. A big transport helicopter. He come around from towards the Idrang Valley, facing us, and turned around, sat down, set his wheels down, and there was blood dripping off between the hinges on the ramp, and he let that ramp down, and what we seen was just unimaginable.
Was this within 30 minutes of the first one landing?
Just a few minutes behind it.
Okay,
yeah.
Okay, so first you saw a Huey helicopter, mm-hmm. come in.
Yes.
And that's the helicopter that just has the one blade, mm-hmm. that goes,
yes,
around,
sir.
In a circle,
yes,
and it's got a supply compartment in the back. And you, mm-hmm. all, what'd you call those a minute ago? Medevac?
Yeah.
A medevac?
Well, they had medevac slicks, which wasn't armed.
Uh-huh.
And then you had your gunship.
So this was a medevac that came in?
No, slick.
It was a slick. So, mm-hmm. it had just come off a battlefield.
It had landed, yeah.
Did you know there was a battle going on?
Yeah, we knew there was a battle going on, yeah.
Okay, all right. So first the small helicopter came in. It had 8 or 10,
mm-hmm.
soldiers in it. And then right after that came a Chinook.
The Chinook, yeah, right behind it.
Tell us about that.
Well, like I said, he turned around, sat down, and you could see blood dripping out of the crack where the ramp, you know, went up. And he let that ramp down, and there was bodies just piled from the back to the way up to the door gunner.
How many?
Well, come find out later on. Altogether, it's 155.
In that one Chinook?
I don't know, because after we unloaded that one, I went up to the tent to start, you know, cleaning them up. So I don't know if another one came out. I don't think one could have held all 155.
What? Now you were 20. Okay, now tell me about, just for a minute if you can, I'm not sure that this is the right word, the mood change or the, you know, from, you know, you went there to volunteer and then all of a sudden you're in this spot that must have been just horrific.
Oh, it was. Devastating.
But you said something to me a minute ago, you didn't let it affect you as much at that time.
At that time, no. We had a job to do.
You had a job to do.
Mm-hmm.
Now, was there somebody behind you barking at you or to tell you what to do? Did you just know what to do?
No, everybody there was volunteers. There were no officers there. So two of us would get up. We started back, and two of us would get up there and place the bodies on stretchers. Now, these bodies were just piled.
Uh-huh.
Because it's a hot landing zone, which would mean they were under heavy fire. And they just had to throw them in there. And didn't have time to put them on litters. In fact, they had 20 on litters. And then the helicopter prepared to take off, and they put an M16 in the pilot's face and told him he wasn't going anywhere. And they loaded, and here they come. And like I said, when they put that ramp down, you just can't imagine what a sight that was. Very devastating. But at the time, we had a job to do. So.
Okay. So you didn't have an officer there, so you guys organized yourselves, and they were landing, and you knew that you needed to take them to a tent?
Yeah.
You had orders to take them to a tent?
Mm-hmm.
So you got up, or whoever, was it you that was in the helicopter? Or?
Well, two of us would get up there at the time, but you would get physically ill, so you had to get back off, and two more would take your place. You couldn't stay there long, because I know Howard knows the stench of death. You just can't get over the stench of death. And those bodies had been out in the hot sun for a couple of days. And they were decomposing.
Uh-huh.
And it could be anywhere from a small bullet hole in the head to body parts.
And you said the small holes in the head you thought were executions?
Usually that's a sign of execution, yeah. Because during those battles, the enemy would come up on a wounded and just shoot them between the eyes and kill them.
Militarily, did they have any other choice? I mean, they could have taken a prisoner, but a wounded soldier was still...
To them, they didn't care. Life meant nothing to those people. So if they come up on a wounded American soldier, they would put a gun into their head and kill them. They didn't take prisoners. Not in this particular instance.
Uh-huh. How many helicopters did you unload that day?
Well, I helped unload the Huey and the first Chinook. And it took us a while because, you know, like I said, you would get physically ill and have to get off. And they were placing the litters on, we put them on litters or stretchers. And they would place them on a little thing we called goats. It was just a little cart with a little motor on the front. And they would haul them up to this tent. And then when we got them all off the helicopter, I went up to the tent. Or we went up to the tent. And it, for the rest of the afternoon and all night that night and about 10 o'clock the next morning, we worked on those bodies just to get them cleaned up and put in body bags. Put them in body bags.
So you put in a 20-hour day.
Yeah, a horrific 20-hour
day. With no relief? Did they not relieve?
No.
Were the officers just not paying attention to what was going on?
No. It was just us volunteers. And you know, it was odd, Randy, that night. It was such a hush in that tent. It was very quiet. No crying. No yelling. No screaming. We were just murmuring between our partners. We had to work in two-man teams. And it was just strange, quiet, dignified.
Were you identifying bodies, or were you...
Yeah, we had to identify them. They had dog tags. And it seemed to me like we put one in the bag with them and put the other one on the bag. Or kept it. I can't remember. But they had dog tags.
They used to put them in their mouths.
Mm-hmm.
Did y'all do about that? Or
no, I didn't. We didn't do that.
Were you consciously thinking about what units they were from? Or
no, I didn't know at the time.
How many soldiers were helping you? 20?
No, there was 10 of us.
10 of you.
Five teams.
do you ever see any of those people right now, or do you know any of their names? Or
I don't know any of their names. Can't remember them.
Yeah.
They were all part of my unit, but we can't remember the names. I can't remember any of the names.
Yeah.